Good morning and welcome to a Red River Radio Spotlight. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and coming up tonight, August 23rd at the Robinson Film Center, a special screening of Face of a Nation, What Happened to the World's Fair, a film by director and architect Mina Chow. And joining me now by phone is Mina Chow to share with us the background and details of this documentary. Mina, thanks so much for joining me today.
Bill, I want to thank you again for having me on your show. It's great to be able to talk to your audience.
Yes. So let's start with the beginning. What prompted your interest in architecture? And that has to do directly with the World's Fair. Could you kind of relate that story for our audience?
I would love to tell you a little bit about the background, which has led to this film. I should say, all of this was buried into my past. I totally forgot about it. And in the making of the film, it all came out. When I was 12 years old, my father and my mom, they came to America. They met in New York, and they took a lot of photographs when they were in New York and they were traveling as new citizens of the United States. They showed me their pictures when I was 12 in front of the architecture at the World's Fair. And suddenly I discovered architecture for the first time. It was a seed that my father planted in me, because this part is not in the movie, but my dad's family and I.M. Pei's family were really good friends. And Pei had already been in the United States. He's about 18 years older than my father. My father could draw like Pei, and he wanted to become an architect. But my grandmother wanted him to follow finance banking like my own grandfather, so she wouldn't let him do that. So he gave up his dream of being an architect to do what my grandmother wanted him to do, but he never gave up the dream of being an architect, and he planted the seed in me by showing me their pictures in front of the architecture at the New York World's Fair.
So in a way, you're kind of living out his dream for him.
In some ways I am, but it's really my dream as well, because I really try to put my heart into everything I create. So whether it's a film or whether it's a building, that's what I do. So whatever expression of creativity I am attempting, I put my heart into it.
So now, one of the statements that you opened the film with is that architecture changed your life. Can you kind of tell us how architecture changed, I guess, your view of life or your desires in life? Something about you fundamentally changed.
Well, this is also getting to the core of who I am. I think I frustrated my family because I was always asking a lot of questions as a child. You couldn't get me to shut up. I was curious. I was always trying to find something to put all my energies in. And when I say architecture changed my life, suddenly I discovered this amazing way of expressing ideas in something that could be created and built and experienced by a lot of people. And if you're really good at pursuing that idea, you really have to push yourself to constantly work on it. So when I discovered architecture, suddenly I found this thing that I could do that with. There is a piece of music that you hear at the end of the film that really captures that feeling for me, and it's called Falling in Love with Architecture, but you hear it at the ending credits. You also hear it in the beginning of the trailer for the film. It's the beginning piece of music, but it's the first time you discover something that you feel like it sort of makes your world. When you're doing something that really you love to do, you lose a sense of time. You forget. That's the love that I'm talking about. It's a love that you suddenly realize there's something bigger than yourself that you can do that can be quite magical.
Now, you also mentioned that music was a huge factor in developing this film. Can you tell us what role music played in the genesis of this idea within your mind?
Well, I've always been somebody who loves music like you, Bill, and I took piano lessons from the second, third grade through, I think, 11th grade or something, and I was competing at the Peabody Conservatory. So piano was something that I've always found a way to express my emotion. And again, I earlier had referred to whether you make a movie, whether you build a building, and in this case, if you're playing a piece of music, there are ways that you can engage your emotions, and it's a very productive and a wonderful way to process your emotions, especially negative emotion. I've always believed that you can express your negative emotion by processing it in something that you create. So music motivated the feeling for the film. I have been carrying this emotion for a very long time, a sort of sadness, despair, and yet I wanted a sense of hope. What we cover in the film, we cover themes of the erosion of America's international image. I have been sensing this since I started traveling as an American, and what I started noticing all throughout my life was that when I would travel, I would go to another country, and I would notice how that other country and its citizens of the world really appreciated art and architecture. And then I would come back to the United States, and I would try to express to my family or to people that I thought would be interested in some of the things I was discovering as an architecture student, and their eyes would glaze over. So some of the things that I thought were incredibly powerful were not being, you know, people were not paying attention to it. And I just thought that was very odd. And so that feeling kind of carried throughout my life. And yet, so then what happened was I started the film, and it sort of culminated the feeling when I realized what you uncover in the film is that what America's image is that we might not seem to care so much about our culture and our arts, but yet we do. I mean, you and I know as Americans that we do care about our culture and our arts, but the feeling that we project, it's not our ideal sense of who we want to project.
One of the themes of this movie, and it's expressed in the title, What Happened to the World's Fair? Now, obviously, since the 1964 World's Fair, there have been indeed fairs or expos across the country and the world. There's been, some iconic structures that have been built through history. The Eiffel Tower is a fine example. It's, a monument that it just bespeaks of Paris, and Jackson Park in Chicago, the Space Needle in Seattle, and Habitat 67 in Montreal. But since that time, America's presence seemed to have fallen behind, and it just doesn't seem like we want to make an effort to put our best foot forward, I guess, at these world's fairs. As you were discovering and exploring this issue, what is it that you found were some of the, underlying reasons for this?
So the story that we're telling in our film, it's very complex. It appears to be a film about architecture, but in reality, it's a film about the erosion of America's image told through architecture. And the topic that we're covering it's called public diplomacy, which is a part of our defense. It's about representation of the American people on an international stage. There are events that do this that people are aware of, like the Olympics, the World Cup in some ways. But when you think about diplomacy, there is this branch of government, and it's in the State Department. And the State Department is there to represent America internationally. Public diplomacy is the branch that is primarily where the citizens of the world engage with each other. It's not just through our diplomats. It's basically like our American soldiers do this as well. They, when they go overseas, they are representing America. And there are other parts that we put out that do this. Anytime we travel, we do it in some ways. So what happened in the story that I uncovered was the beginning of the isolationism that took over this country. So at the end of the Cold War, we thought we had won the Cold War. Obviously, that's changed now since the 90s. But what happened was we believed that we didn't need to engage on this level. An isolationism took over our country. And there's always going to be people that don't want to engage because they're in their own world and they get caught up in their own lives. But they don't really understand that expertise has shown years and years of diplomacy have provided evidence that we need to engage with the world if we want to survive. And it's actually very simplistic for people to turn into ourselves and think that we don't need to worry about the rest of the world when we're living in a global economy where we're so connected to each other. So the film has revealed the beginning of the isolationism that has taken over our country and in some ways have led to where we are today. And it's actually very naive to believe that we can't engage or that we can just rely on ourselves to produce all of the things that we need for survival in our lives.
In a way, it seems that the world fair of past was a grand pageant, where each nation brought out the best of their best in terms of science, technology, architecture. And what it seems like you're saying is that somehow we just decided no longer to participate in that pageant across the world.
Yes. And we decided that we didn't need to participate in that pageant because we already put out so much about America. And that is one of the biggest arguments about not participating in world fairs. So the people that stop believing that we need to engage on this level in the regards to putting out messages about America through our world fair participation, they thought, we don't need to put out messages about America. We're already putting out messages of America. Our Hollywood films, we have all our global companies. We've got our internet, and we've got a lot of different new technologies in which we can engage with the world through different means. We don't need to get together physically at these events since we're already putting out messages about America. We're the only country in the world that does not have a division, a ministry of culture. We sort of had a ministry of culture when we had the United States Information Agency. That was our ministry of culture. But when it was eliminated it was starting to be eliminated in 1998 or 2001, I think is when it completely disappeared. There was no branch of U.S. government that represented us as the best of America's people to the world. We just kind of put out messages haphazardly. So there's a complete disjunction about what messages we're putting out there about the American people. Whereas in the movie, we have this guy named Jack Macy, and he's the hero of the film, and he really defended our image by putting out the best of our American creativity. He brought together the most creative minds in architecture, engineering, photography, film, to put out messages about how innovative we were. And unfortunately, when he left, they didn't replace him. Why they didn't replace him was because of the cutbacks in government.
Now, one of the insights that you gleaned to, and you referred to this in one of the interviews that I read up on, was about the ivory tower. Can you fill us in on what your thoughts were about the ivory tower?
So I kind of grew up in the ivory tower, and everyone knows the ivory tower as, you know, the academic elite. So my feelings about the ivory tower is that, and I feel like I've been a victim of it too sometimes, but most of the time people would consider me part of the ivory tower. The ivory tower is supposed to be the elite of academia. And, you know, there's a lot of intellectual discussion and discourse happening in the ivory tower. And there's also a lot of pushback, as you see our culture is pushing back about against the ivory tower, because the ivory tower also in some ways symbolizes the experts in our country. I think that both sides are at fault. I think that the ivory tower has not learned how to talk to people in English. And I think that, in fact, that's what I decided to do, was rather than write a book about this, I decided to make a movie. I decided to try to find a way of engaging with people emotionally by making a story and a movie that deals with complicated and complex issues, rather than write a book that not everyone's going to read, only maybe my friends might read or my colleagues might read. I wanted to have a dialogue with just people, because every one of us is so different. And, you know, I think that the ivory tower has not done a very good job at communicating why it's important, the things that we do, or why the issues that we're grappling with, or why is it that we need public diplomacy? Why is it that we need architecture? Why is it that we need more dialogue and more sharing of information about architecture? But then the other side of the coin is that I think that people that are not experts about issues need to really start to be more curious about things, and they need to start to try to learn about them. You know, you don't have to pick every single topic, but if you're interested in something, then you should try to find out more about it rather than just spouting off your opinion when you don't really do the research.
Let's get into just give us a basic rundown of the film. How does this lay out? You start out at the beginning with your parents, and where do we end up at?
So the film begins with how my mom and dad got engaged at the 1964 New York World's Fair. The structure of the film is done in a way so that, you know, we actually are weaving two stories together. There's my story as how I became an architect, and then there's the story of America's World Fair participation. So we kind of go back and forth between my story and what I call is Jack's story. So Jack's story is America's participation at World Fair, and it's pretty much the architects that have been responsible for our participation, and they're talking about their experiences. My story and then America's story. Now, if you want to talk about music, this is the fun part for me. I had a lot of fun with this. I actually, in some ways, my story is piano music, but you always hear piano in some way. And then America's story is epic orchestral music. I had to have a 42-piece orchestra to symbolize America because, to me, that the grandiosity of the country.
Right.
In some ways, you can say I'm very patriotic. Why is it that I would even do this film? When you are the child of immigrants, and I am the daughter of a first-generation immigrant, I grew up hearing about how lucky I was to be born in this country, and that I should be kissing the ground that I'm standing on, and that all these starving children in China... I'm not the only person that's heard this story from their parents, I am sure of that. But growing up, you hear this all the time, and so you end up with this really big sense of the country. And one could say that it's an overinflated sense of American exceptionalism. But when I traveled, I started realizing that other countries might think that about their country as well. You know, it was a little hard for me, and this is why I say that the film is about an idealistic American architect who struggles to keep her dream alive as she journeys to discover why America abandoned World Fairs. Idealistic, because I grew up with this idealistic sense of America, and yet, in some ways, when I discovered the story in 2010, it was like my idealism was being challenged. And maybe some people get that challenge a lot earlier in life, but I never wanted to take off my rose-colored glasses. I've always believed that this country has so much potential and is incredible, and I still feel really lucky that I love this country so much. I get very emotional about it, and yet I don't want to be preaching to people about what to do. So the story is about my story woven with America's story, and then it culminates at some point at near the end of the film, and then you see what happened.
So rather than be preachy, you decided to write a love letter, basically.
It is my love letter, and, you know, creating anything with your heart, it's really hard to do because you're asked to basically revisit the emotions that you experience, and by making this film, I had to do it not only in working with the composer, because what the music does throughout the film is it captures a sense of sadness and hope that I'm not happy about where we are today, but I still feel like it's not so much about, I don't want to get political because this is not, it's a political film, but it's not a political film. I mean, this movie literally, it's about believing in America and yet understanding that we're not just the only country in the world. And so there's that sort of line that I kind of navigate back and forth throughout the whole movie. And, you know, I By doing that, I hope that people start to feel some of the emotion that I feel when I had to go through making the movie.
Right.
And, you know, I don't think I'm alone in this feeling.
So let's get to the evening now. You're going to be there. There'll be an opening reception, correct? Can you lay out the evening of the screening for us real quick?
Yes. So it starts with a 5 o'clock reception, and it's at the Robinson Film Center. So from 5 to 6, there's going to be that pre-reception where they're going to have appetizers and a bar. And then at 6:15, we're going to do the screening, and it goes for 57 minutes. And so then after that, there's a Q&A. And I'm sure people will want to be, you know, kind of mingling and talking and stuff like that after that.
Well, now, who are the sponsors? Because you've got some people backing this the screening up, too. So just give them a shout out, if you could, real quick.
Yes, I am very indebted to our sponsors, which include the Louisiana Architectural Foundation, Shreveport Downtown Development, Toe Architecture, and the American Institute of Architects.
And this is a preview for something that's coming up in New Orleans, is it not?
Yes. This is a preview screening for the Architecture and Design Film Festival that will be happening a couple days later in New Orleans, where they're going to be showcasing a bunch of architecture films.
Do you have any final thoughts you'd like to share with our audience before we go?
I just want to make sure that people realize that this country is the best country in the world when we all participate in governing the country, which means that we need to go out and vote. We need to think about how we can engage with the country to be the best country in the world. I made a movie. This is my contribution. It's my public service. But everyone has their own role to play.
Mina, I want to thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Thanks, Bill.
That was director and architect Mina Chow, who joined me by phone to discuss her new film, Face of a Nation, What Happened to the World's Fair. And a screening takes place tonight, August 23rd, at the Robinson Film Center at 6 p.m. There'll be a reception at 5 p.m., and following the film, there'll be a question and answer session with Mina. For complete details, visit the Robinson Film Center online at robinsonfilmcenter.org or call 318-459-4122. That's 318-459-4122. This has been a Red River Radio Spotlight, and for Red River Radio, I'm Bill Beckett.